This is Leo Baybue for KTWH, Two Harbors Community Radio, and everything's happening at once. Wasn't there a movie about that? Well, anyway, everything is happening at once in the phenology world. The timing of things this spring has all come to a head. We've got leaf out every which way. We've got grass up. We have frogs singing their songs to us, and we have a big holiday weekend that some people think means the beginning of summer in the Northland, and we have an 80-degree day today, and we'll have a 50-degree day tomorrow. Who knows what is next? But somebody who is paid to observe and learn from those observations is with us in the studio today for Wandering Nature News, Michaela Rice. Welcome back, Michaela.
Happy warm day. It is definitely warm today.
It's stuffy in this particular studio.
See, yeah, if I'm panting a little bit, I'm sorry.
We may need to hydrate mid-interview. So, Michaela, a couple of weeks ago, we had a really special presentation from Kelly Amath about keeping lead out of our fishing tackle. So we missed that busy transition period to comment about some more of the phenology. Now it's kind of all happened to us and delivered us nearly to summer. But what are some of the things that might be missing, some of the changes that we're still awaiting that are called spring phenomena?
I've been looking for insect activity that I haven't really quite noticed in full bore yet, and I do not mean mosquitoes. I could care less about those guys.
Had a mosquito in my living room.
Yeah, I mean, the mosquitoes are out, the ticks are out, but I mean the other insects that maybe the birds and bats and other, I haven't seen a spider. I haven't seen many ants. So I think we're still waiting for some of those. I have not seen a turtle up here, but I know the frogs are out. Like you said, they're singing. So I think, yes, kind of late bloomers. I know the birds are, wow, they're awake and at it. I've seen nests. Lots of breeding activity from our birds like the ruffed grouse. I've heard tons of drumming the past few weeks as I've kind of bebopped around the North Shore myself. I got up to Grand Portage for the first time, and I heard grouse drumming up there as well. The turkeys are nesting. I believe the loons are nesting in this area. I've heard reports that they're off the lake. People haven't seen them. I've seen a lot of common merganser activity in the lake and in the rivers. I think when the smelt started running a few weeks ago, which I guess the run for steelhead and smelt were about a month behind this year. So it would make sense that some other phenology is behind. Maybe that's
sure.
We were kind of chatting about some trees and their fruit might be a bit behind, and some of that food might be a little bit less available for birds right now.
Yes, before we went onto the recording, I was asking you about that because we're bringing our feeders in at night because the bears have made their presence known, and turns out that some of what we thought was a bear activity pulling on feeders was Mr. Raccoon is still in the neighborhood as well. So we put the feeders back out, and the birds are really anxious for that food yet. Everybody from blue jays to you just name it, and they're there, starlings and the songbirds that we're really interested in, they're all congregated. And I ask you, at this point, should I be weaning them off of that? Because maybe they're just conditioned to hang out at that feeder, but there's real question about what other food sources are available, right? If they're insect-eating birds, you said it might be a little early for a lot of insect availability, and what fruiting plant might be available, or would it be remnants from last year's seed crop? I don't know what's available to them.
That's a really good question. I mean, there's really no catkins or berries left from last year. I haven't noticed any old mast on the trees or anything. So yeah, I personally think that animals are always going to take the easy route. So if you're offering them free food, they're going to take it whether they really need it or not. It's easy. It's available.
Right.
They know where to find it. So absolutely, they're going to go there first. If you take it away, doesn't mean that they're going to necessarily be without food. We could theorize that it may change things eventually, especially if birds are somehow kind of out of their carrying capacity and relying on food, but I don't think we're at that point yet.
I think it is going to be blurred for the coming decades by some of the rapid species movement due to
mm-hmm.
climate change.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have a lot of new birds or transients that are trying to figure out, is this a good place for me?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
And birds leaving,
Yes.
They're going to be changing their behavior as well, so...
Okay.
Yeah, I really enjoyed finding some wildflowers. Wildflowers are probably one of my utmost favorite or guilty pleasures.
Sure.
Spotted the marsh marigold has really been blooming the last few weeks. That's that bright yellow, kind of small, shrubby.
It has kind of a succulent looking leaf.
Yeah,
it's kind of shiny, and they're in the Knife River tributaries as well, where we have a lot of we had a lot of flooding over the banks, so we had a lot of short-lived wetlands along the banks of some of our tributaries that are growing marsh marigolds, and they might not every year have enough moisture
because
they like their feet wet.
That's what I was going to say. They like their feet wet, so. I've really enjoyed that outcropping. I've seen some bloodroot, which is a great sign of spring, and that's we have some bloodroot at the park. I'm noticing the large leaf aster. I can literally see all in the understory. They're unfolding right now. I can see them as I'm driving. That won't be blooming until way later.
Right. It's a late bloomer, but it has big leaves that have to come out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the little horsetail ferns are so cute because they're kind of sticking out of the grass right now. The brome and everything hasn't totally shot up, but it's starting. I mean, there's some places where it's already like...
So you're talking about Equisetum, I think,
yes,
the Latin name.
Yep.
Some people think of them as not really desirable, but that's a whole other conversation.
Right. They're aggressive, but they're native.
Okay.
So there's two types of Equisetum, but I like the fluffier ones. It's called horsetail Equisetum. So
yes, the horsetail is what I was thinking of. Mm-hmm. I didn't know there's a coarser Equisetum, I guess, is what you're saying.
Well, there's a snake grass, so it doesn't have the whorls of leaves. It's just a single stalk, and it looks like snakes hiding in the grass.
Oh, could be menacing to some folks.
Yeah.
Well, we were menaced a little bit. I mean, we're human beings sitting cozy in our homes, but rather late at night, there was some terrifying caterwauling out in the woods. I learned from the neighbor that Fox Den is inhabited now not by just a mating pair, but at least four kit foxes. I'm not giving any coordinates for where this is happening. It's too cool, and if you don't have a game cam there, you're just going to have to live vicariously. Maya's talking about it, but you told me that you were aware of that vocalization that they do.
Yeah, I think I've only really heard reports of it happening at night, which I think because fox are very active at night. I'm wondering if your neighbor has caught any prey items that the kits have been eating, or if they're old enough to have mom be bringing back live food yet.
Oh, to see that on the game cam. I have to check back in with them.
Yeah.
That would be really interesting.
It's really cool to kind of see how the mom will bring back different types of prey as the kits get older. You know, they're trying new foods, and it kind of goes with chick availability. Foxes are really good at hunting, you know, goslings, turkey chicks, and stuff like that.
I'm afraid my neighbors will say they're very good around hen houses.
Yeah, I'm sure that's also the case. Yes, they're great at catching birds. So we've
got young in the dens there, and where are deer at in terms of birthing?
Yeah, so down in the south, the southern part of Minnesota, there are fawns being born. I don't really anticipate people sighting fawns up here for another week or so. Okay. Moose were born last month. I haven't heard of anyone seeing those. I think up in the north, the moose and the deer keep their calves pretty tucked away. You know, their fawns and their calves pretty tucked away. I also haven't seen a single baby yet, so I'm pretty jealous that your neighbor has seen some babies on even the cam. I haven't seen any chicks. Nothing. I've been babyless. It's my favorite part of the year.
Well, somebody please give your email address, Michaela, and people will send you their
I don't care if it's a baby
shots.
Frog. I'll come see it. I just want to celebrate spring.
You've enjoyed the ephemeral flowers. That's good. And they are especially vibrant in those weeks where we have dappled shade. We don't have full leaf out yet. Eventually, by early June, we'll have those black ash and oaks fully leafed out. It'll get a little darker. Of course, our woods are a little brighter and prone to drying right now because tens of thousands of acres have had the balsam fir killed by the spruce budworm and fall into the ground, and there's a lot more sunlight hitting that forest floor, and that could not be helping our soil moisture.
No, I've had a lot of tourists, people who are kind of coming up here maybe for the first time in a few years or the first time ever, and that's the question they keep asking is, what is going on with all the trees? Why are there so many trees cut down? Why are there so many dead trees? I get a lot of comments about, oh, what happened on 61? All these trees are bent over. That's remarkable. Still, all the poplars, they're still like bent over. It's like they all have backaches and they're all bent over. Or the pines are just snapped in half. So that's going to open some canopy up as well.
Sure.
And yeah, spruce budworm, I know, is on a lot of people's mind.
Right. And so reforestation is not something like growing tomatoes in flats and boom, you have mature plants that year. This is going to take a long, steady hand to get that landscape covered with trees that are going to fix carbon dioxide, get that out of the atmosphere and create cooling and different habitat, because the habitat is changing. What you have is a sort of a de facto savanna with a lot of places where healthy trees aren't growing because the balsams have just crashed all over each other, blocking even emerging plants from getting through. It's a tricky situation. It requires, in some cases, a lot of machine work if you want to get a systematic replanting of other species and different age classes of species.
Yep. The age classes I've also been reading is so important for the health of a forest, right? And right now we don't really have those different age classes. It's all kind of a monoculture of some like a birch, or birch stands are also getting old, but they're all the same year. And then the understory, you know, so there's these strange changes. And I think the next 10, 15 years up here, things are really going to look different when a lot of the remainder of these dead trees also start falling down.
Well,
you know, it's going to continue to open up.
Something to ponder. I'm in the advocacy group, Advocates for the Knife River Watershed, and we have a lot of the spruce budworm down. A lot of the reclamation projects are moving. Sometimes they burn the wood, but mostly they get the balsam in contact with the ground where it can rot, and they clear away spaces to plant where they can. But in a lot of places, clones of aspen are popping up,
and they're all balsam poplar.
Balsam poplar, but boy, a lot of quaking aspen too. And they're all coming up at the same time, so they're all going to be one age class. And guess what? Climate change is going to be hard on quaking aspen, so they may not actually get a 60-70 year growth cycle, and they may fail as we heat up. Forest is going to have holes in its succession structure.
Absolutely.
Something to think about. There's a lot of need for land managers to help the private landowner to understand what they might want to be doing. With people want to do right by their forest stewardship, but it's hard to know in this changing situation.
I know the USDA, I think, is offering grants right now to help with some of the spruce budworm, but some of that, you know, money is ephemeral too, and you got to know where to look for it. So I hope that there's some groups that are, you know, helping landowners.
We've heard some good news in that regard, that there's some new grants coming along from what's called the NRCS, the National Resource Conservation Service. So I would encourage people to listen up and maybe talk to the people in their soil and water conservation district.
Absolutely. Call your local offices and ask for some resources. I know Gooseberry planted some trees last week. And we also have a new pollinator garden on the lawn of the visitor center. So it's going to, you know, take a few weeks to even get some growth, but by next summer I think we'll have some bloom. Some of these perennials take 2 years to have their first bloom, but I'm really excited to see what's coming up.
All right, something to look out for, a reason to check back at in the seasons to come at Gooseberry at the Visitor Center to see who's doing the blooming. Do you have any activities coming up this busy holiday weekend or the week after that you'd like to refer folks to?
Well, for folks that are coming up to the park on Friday and Saturday, I'd like to just promo my tree hugging program, which is so fun. It's a well-being. It's a very lighthearted, meditative program. You don't have had to have any experience doing any of this. I walk you through it all. And we learn about trees on the way, but this is at 10:30 on Friday. And we meet by the visitor center, and it's about 45 minutes to an hour experience. And then on Saturday, I have a forest bathing program at 11:30, which is very similar, but we don't use prolonged touch for calming our nervous system. This is more engaging the senses and just slowing down and observing. It's a very ancient practice. Everyone knows how to do it. It's in our DNA, but we need to just kind of cue the mind to slow down. So that's at 11:30 on Saturday. And then I also have a spring hike at 1 p.m. And I'll also have my NatCorps intern that you can come meet, Zachary. And we'll be taking a hike probably where there's the most flowers. So I'll be kind of...
You're going to be scouting this
week. I'll be scouting, but yep, that's at 1 p.m. on this Saturday. So I'd love to meet some people and bring your binoculars, because the birds, you know, are out too, and the mergansers in the river, and then we'll be scouting out flowers.
I think it's pretty dynamic for songbirds. In fact, if you're thinking of meditating during your forest bathing, you might have a bird that is insistent that you listen up.
Or a red squirrel, because they're pretty gregarious.
If you're in the wrong place, the red squirrel would say, could you just move along a little? Yeah. Well, Michaela, any other things that we haven't brought up that you've heard about that you want people to know about, observations? Keep an eye out this week. Keeping an eye out this weekend, what, for fawns? Might be time.
Maybe. Okay. Yeah. I would love, we still haven't heard from any listeners, but I'm expecting turkey chicks to be making an appearance soon, or grouse chicks. I'm really curious who's going to see the first batch of little ping pong balls running around.
Well, I know that you told me that you're very impressed by the weirdness of those young turkeys. So mm-hmm. I've had just a lone tom running around my place. So I'm not sure whether
Is he still strutting?
Apparently he's gone to the other, there's a neighbor that he likes better. I don't know what they keep around their house.
Maybe another lady over there.
Well, in which case I'm wondering if I'm going to hear the pitter patter of little turkeys, but I'll keep you posted.
All right. Sounds good.
Thanks a lot, Michaela. We'll see you on the radio. And you know, we're getting to that time of year where you might become scarce. So we'll have to talk about whether we're going to have you back every 2 weeks.
Yeah, or if, you know, I have an intern that seems really interested in coming on air as well. So we'll...
Okay. Love to audition him.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's put him through the ringer.
Absolutely. We'll be tough on him. All right. Thanks a lot, Michaela.
All right. Take care.
Bye now. It's Michaela Rice, Gooseberry Falls State Park naturalist, and this is Wandering Nature News on KTWH.